This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho.
Allow me to introduce us. I'm Jeff Meller along with Brian Hanley, hanging out with you on a somewhat rainy Sunday morning. I hope everybody, Brian, took in that this past week of brilliant weather that we had in April, because it looks like it's going away for a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, we can't really get too...
There we go. You got it.
Yeah, we can't get too upset about it, given the week we just had. But that said, yeah, the wind, the rain, hopefully Dylan Cease and the Southsiders are going to get the game in today, because they could actually win a baseball series.
How about that? What a novel concept. Yeah, the White Sox get the walk-off winner yesterday against the Orioles in extra innings, and it was a much-needed win in a seesaw affair, because Friday night was not good for the White Sox. Ooh. That was I thought that was the roughest loss of the season. Now, there's been some bad ones this season, but I thought the way they let that one get away from them a little bit, especially when you're considering how they're scuffling along right now, that one hurts. And so to come back and...
Once, not twice, not three times, four times.
Yes.
And look, 10 walks issued, and thank God their defense was on its game yesterday. But I know Rick Hahn is trying to dismiss any parallels being drawn from this start to last season's start, and injuries included, but guess what? There are parallels to be drawn from last season to this season, and they needed that, and they celebrated it like it was a World Series win, and maybe for the psyche of the team, it was akin to that.
Yeah, no, I think that's, like you said, much needed here, and we'll see if they can get this game in today, because it would definitely benefit them with Dylan Cease on the mound against Grayson Rodriguez. We will have your pregame coverage coming your way at 12:30. The events preceding that World Series-type celebration.
The pitch, Colas in the right, over the head, and the White Sox win it. The rookie, Oscar Colas, comes through in the bottom of the 10th. 7-6 the final. It was a wild one, and the White Sox win it.
Connor McKnight on the call there yesterday, and right here on your home of White Sox baseball. So yeah, they're 6-9 now, not the way they wanted to start, but at least for White Sox fans' sake and the White Sox as well, the Twins lost yesterday, because they've been rolling along at 10-5 now. So already you find yourself kind of trying to come from behind in this season very early on.
Look, in Baltimore is the young up-and-coming team, one of the young up-and-coming teams, and playing loose and all that. But it was great that Colas was the guy who delivered, being a rookie and all that. But you've had injuries. You have a run differential that's in double digits again, and that was a bugaboo from throughout the season last year. So they're minus 19 in run differential. They have a losing record at home, so hopefully they even that up today with Dylan Cease on the bump. And then they also have a losing record against teams with who have winning records. And those are all things that they could not overcome last year. Again, it's early, but that was the chorus we were singing last season. So they need to start stacking series wins, and they actually have to get one before you can start stacking them.
And if you're asking the question, so why does run differential matter? Ultimately, it doesn't, because you only need to tack on the wins. So if you lose a game, whatever it happens to be, 16-6 to the Giants, 13-3 to the Giants, 12-3 to the Giants, 13-9 to the Pirates, those, while they're tough losses, they're just one loss in the win column. The one thing about run differential is that they've done studies, and if you want to look at what is the best predictor of in-season future success, it is run differential. And so that's where it becomes a little bit alarming that you're only, 15 games into the season, and yet still the White Sox are already minus 19 in that run differential category. So if you're listening saying, what do I care? They're only three games under 500. That's the significance of something like run differential. That's why when you look at it and you go under the hood, that's why you say, all right, this is why it might matter a little bit more than just your run-of-the-mill win-loss record.
Yeah, because, again, the bullpen's had its issues. That everything, it's like last year, they couldn't get everything clicking at the same time for any extended period of time. So the defense bailed them out in many situations yesterday. Terrific, but they did issue 10 walks. So the offense has had its starts and stops. They really do. I think psychologically, if they lost that game yesterday, that I know Mike Clevenger talked about silver linings, and they've been close, and they should have won some games. But the fact is, they haven't won enough of those games. So I think you saw that kind of release of all the frustrations and celebrations to the point where Colas got two Gatorade baths or ice water baths. I don't know what the protocol is on that, because Billy Russo was doing the translation, as he's been doing forever on the South Side, when Oscar was being interviewed by Len and Steve Stone on the TV broadcast, and I was watching. And so he's standing pretty much a foot away from Oscar, and Oscar's answering all the questions. And here comes another teammate with the big ice water bin. And they tell Billy in English, you might want to move to your left so you don't get doused.
Como?
Yeah. And Billy goes, thanks for the heads up, guys. And Oscar got it yet again. So I don't know if you're supposed to give the heads up to anybody. But Billy didn't want to get the nice Izod belt. And then, you know, he was dressed very nicely. He didn't want to get wet. And Steve and Len was there for him.
It would seem like, yeah, that only works when you do have a translator. Like, you can't give the heads up to, I guess you, but then again, if you have a player who's speaking English who doesn't need a translator, you probably don't have to give the translator's probably not standing at their side in that situation. So yeah, very humorous on the South Side yesterday. They do get the win, which was nice. Too, looking at where they're at, so you're just trying to stay afloat right now if you're them, because they're already dealing with the injuries. And maybe that's, really when you look at it, where you start saying, okay, well, is this just the same old White Sox yet again? Because Aloy's back, which is nice. It was a minimal injured list stint for him. He was back on Friday night, and he was back in the lineup again yesterday. But they're still now without Tim Anderson. Rick Hahn offered up some optimism, saying the other day that they're hoping he's going to be back closer to that two-week timeline rather than the four-week timeline that they initially gave. But Yoan Moncada is back on the injured list because of a back injury. So the problem is, in the lineup, you've got, some significant hitters who you're missing. And the one thing I've pointed out so far this season is that without Jose Abreu, I was okay with the roster up and down, and I didn't think it was a great I didn't think it was a great allocation of resources by the Astros to sign an older player like Jose Abreu to that. So I thought it was a good decision by the White Sox to not get emotional and bring him back. However, you look at the lineup, and without Abreu there, you start taking any other hitter out of the lineup, and all of a sudden, it looks very pedestrian in comparison to the rest of the league.
Yeah, and one thing about the Astros, they have the luxury of adding a contract and a player like Jose Abreu at the tail end of his career, whereas I'm with you and was with you and the team last year. I didn't think he was coming back, and I didn't think he should be coming back. Again, emotions have to be set aside. What's best for the team when you have guys playing positions that are not really fit to play, so you're not maximizing the younger talent and guys like Vaughn. And, it was interesting some of the comments Jose made since leaving the city and being a little bit more honest, I guess, about where he thought the team was last year and where maybe he thought the negotiations, if there were any at all, which doesn't sound like there was. But he was kind of okay moving on. Jake Berger, I don't know how much 16-inch softball you played. You're a much younger man than I, Jeff. But Jake Berger looks like any guy on a really great, Chicago 16-inch softball team that wins every league every year. That you have one guy like that. He just looks like that guy, right?
Yes.
He's just Sam Southside ripping the cover off a 16-inch softball. And he can play some third base, too, which is good.
And this gets to the point, too, though, having all these players play positions where they're not necessarily comfortable. Andrew Vaughn in the outfield last year, Aloy kind of, again, Rick Hahn talking about bringing him back, easing him back as a designated hitter, at least initially, which makes sense. But, of course, as a 25-year-old, it kind of sucks that you're already cast aside as the designated hitter. And I know he's fought that as well. The truth is, though, they need his bat in the lineup to stay healthy. So that's where it gets problematic for somebody like Jake Berger, who in limited opportunities has shown you why he was a first-round pick. Now, he's dealt with injuries throughout his career that has kind of slowed his ability to get to the major leagues. But now that he's here on a more regular basis, you're seeing the power that he provides. And I think the White Sox lineup can really use that here. But you know, he needs, you know, an injury by Yoan Moncada to find a way to sneak in there because of all these issues at first base, you know. And then you go out and you spend a big chunk of cash on Andrew Benintendi, which is great.
Yeah.
It was a nice signing. But he is a gold glove left fielder. You saw that on Friday night, why he did that. But now you're taking away a spot where most teams hide their worst fielders. Benintendi needs to play there because that's where he excels. That's what you're paying some of his salary for. But it takes away one of those spots where you could hide someone like Aloy. Or, you know, from time to time, Andrew Vaughn could play in left field last season when they needed him to. So now Andrew Vaughn's, you're a first baseman, go ahead. But again, now someone like Jake Berger can't get those at-bats in some of those spots because you've already got them clogged up with all these DH types.
And if you remember back when the White Sox dealt Chris Sale to the Red Sox, and I know a lot of Red Sox fans wish that probably never happened because it didn't play out so well.
They did get a World Series, though.
They did. And now it's, you know, between the injuries and ineffectiveness of Chris, I don't know if he's going to take scissors to any uniforms in Beantown. But Benintendi was the guy that the White Sox asked for first. And he was the centerpiece of that deal in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Sox said, no, try again. We're not giving him up at that, you know, at that tender age. And so they ended up getting Yoan Moncada. And a lot of Sox fans are probably still wondering, you know, if that was the right guy to ask for. Because you see the talent and you see the possibilities and you see the flashes and you even see a season of it on occasion. But you haven't seen the consistency, certainly, in that. But so eventually Rick Hahn got his Benintendi a couple teams removed from the initial Chris Sale trade.
Yeah, and again, that's worked out so far so good. But that's where, you know, I like I said, I'd really like to see more of Jake Berger. But he plays a serviceable third base, right?
Yes.
But he's still obviously somebody who's going to be replaced defensively in the late innings. That was done on Friday night. So they clearly don't want him, you know, manning the hot corner as often as you would, you know, an elite third baseman. So, but you got to find ways to get that bat into the lineup, especially if he keeps hitting home runs. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Like I said, they've got a little bit of a reprieve right now because Moncada is on the injured list, but it's a back injury. So I don't want to get ahead of myself, but they're hoping that that's going to be just a short stay. They were actually reluctant to even put him on the injured list a few days ago. They were hoping they could avoid that stint. So you'd imagine he'll probably be back, you know, and the shorter end of that. So once he returns, we'll see what they do, especially if Jake Berger keeps hitting, because again, I don't know what other spots there are for him, because without the shift, Bri, I don't think he's going to be playing second base.
No,
remember there was a little talk about that.
Yeah, I hope
ever so
very
briefly.
Little talk. Yeah, that's not ideal in anyone's world, I don't believe.
He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. There's a little bit of Sox talk for you. We will get to the Cubs a little bit later as well. They go down in L.A. to the Dodgers last night. But up next, we'll let you hear from the Bulls brass as they met the media yesterday in their season-ending presser. If you missed it, we'll share what Arturis Karnasovas had to say about the future of the Bulls right here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Miller and Hanley with you here on Sunday morning. We'll be here till 11 o'clock. Talking all Chicago sports with you here on ESPN 1000. Let's slip in a couple quick calls here before we share with you some Arturis Karnasovas. Frank, driving around, wants to talk some White Sox. Frank, you're on ESPN 1000 with Miller and Hanley. What's going on, my friend?
Morning, guys. How are you? Great show as usual.
Thank you, Frank.
Couple of comments. One of the things that's been bothering me for a whole week. Last week in Pittsburgh, they're going for the series win. And he sits Robert because he needs a rest. What does a 24-year-old kid with 10 games into the season need a rest for? Your best hitter, you got two guys on the disabled list already. He sits his best hitter in that game. That's one.
Well, Frank, at least they didn't lose that game 1-0. Oh, wait. Go ahead. you're right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Point
Another
taken.
Another thing, you just made a comment that they took Berger out for defense. What, Oberto's the defensive replacement for Berger? Give me a break, will you please? You know what? You got to keep Berger's bat in the lineup because how long do you think it's before Jimenez and Moncada will go back on the disabled list. These guys, you know what? I grew up in baseball in the 50s and 60s. Those guys played. Every little injury these guys sustained that they're out. You know, they should read Cal Ripken's book. That's what they should read.
Wow.
The injuries that guy played with. Thanks for taking my
call, Frank. Guys.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate the passion.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah, and I do wonder, listen, yesterday there was no defensive replacement for Jake Berger. Now, it wasn't the same situation because the White Sox were not leading in that game. And I would say, I think most managers would do what Pedro Grifol did on Friday night, and they're going to, with a 3-0 lead, you're going to probably bring in, whether or not, you know, I don't have enough of a body of work to really know Hanser Alberto as a third baseman. But Jake Berger, I just know, is not a great defensive player, so
right.
It's not surprising that they would make that.
But, hey, I know Pedro didn't have the day that David Ross had. Let's leave it at that yesterday.
Let's go to Owen in Willowbrook. Hey, Owen, what's going on? Hello, Owen. All right. Maybe lost Owen there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
oh,
hey, Owen, how
beautiful.
Are you?
Oh, good. Hey, I heard you guys talking about the roster a little bit. You know, it's kind of comprised of a lot of DH hitters. Again, I blame our management for that. But the biggest problem you have with this team is the bullpen. 3 years ago, the strength was supposed to be the bullpen. Ever since then, they've gone downhill. And obviously, we got Hendricks out and Crochet's been hurt. But for him to go out and get Diekman the other night, when you got a 3-0 lead, that guy's like throwing gasoline on fire. I mean, he watched two guys. The guy's been a left-hander with 7 different teams, and that's our big move last year. And you know what? This team is so flawed that there's so many fixes. But and then I got to say, Grifol, it's early,
mm-hmm.
but we have a 3-0 lead, and we bring our part-time closer in the 7th inning after Diekman starts, and we had the day off the day before. Why you'd ever bring Diekman in a high-leverage situation, and Lopez is not the guy to bring in with men on base in that situation. I don't mind him starting an inning
yeah.
clean, the closer. But just, I mean, he's learning on the job, I think.
Yep.
But, they, you know, I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to this team, to be honest with you.
I hear you,
and
Owen.
I think it's going to be a long, long season.
Hmm. Early, but there are some issues. And I found it curious, Jeff, and appreciate the call, and that Pedro was asked about the walks yesterday, and you know, they end up overcoming 10 walks issued. And he said, well, I'm not getting into that. What do you mean you're not getting into that? And he basically said that's Ethan Katz and his coaching staff will deal with that directly with the pitchers. But, you know, as a manager, I think it's a fair question as to, you know, what's going on. And with Kopech early, when he wasn't walking guys, they were just barreling up on him. It was
yeah.
like, well, maybe he's tipping his pitches. And so there have been issues not only with the with the bullpen, but with the rotation. It was interesting. Kopech had 2 pitches yesterday, right?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, if he had a 3rd pitch, he probably could have got through the 6th or 7th inning, but obviously he didn't. You know, I still don't know what to make of Michael Kopech. And he was the guy for years who everyone couldn't wait to see on the south side. How dominant was he going to be? What kind of a superstar was he going to be? And then he had issues, and then he sat out with COVID. I mean, for the COVID stuff and physical and mental issues, everything. But I still don't know who he is or what he is.
I don't think the White Sox do either. And Kopech was supposed to be who Dylan Cease is.
Yes.
I mean, and in some ways, the White Sox are fortunate that Dylan Cease has really, he's become everything you could have hoped for and more.
Oh.
I remember Rick Sutcliffe on this station, you know, working with Waddle and Sylvie, you know, I get a chance to hear a lot of stuff that goes on with them. And Sut, the day of the trade,
yep.
he wasn't disappointed that the Cubs were trading away Eloy Jimenez.
Which most people thought that was the centerpiece. Eloy was the centerpiece of the deal.
Rick Sutcliffe was devastated that the Cubs were trading away Dylan Cease because he truly believed that he was going to be an ace in this league. And, you know, all these years later, Sut was clearly right. He knew what he was talking about. And the White Sox have truly benefited from him. We'll see if he can turn things or, you know, continue the winning ways for the White Sox. But it does feel like early in the season, every time Dylan Cease goes out to pitch, it feels like a must win for the White Sox because they don't know what they're going to get those other 4 days, Bri.
Absolutely. And that's an issue. And I know Rick Hahn was a little sensitive about it when he was being he was talking to the media the other day, and Paul Sullivan, the longtime baseball scribe, dean of baseball writers and columnists for the Tribune, you know, was asking him and Rick was getting a little tired of, you know, no one says negative things. The fans don't come up to me and say, boy, this sure looks like the start of 2022 all over again. They only tell you guys that. Imagine that. And then Sully wrote, imagine that. 11th season for Rick Hahn and two winning seasons under his belt. Imagine that.
Hmm. Well, to another organization in town that is still trying to put together winning seasons, back-to-back winning seasons. I'm not going to give them, I don't think you can officially call it a winning season this year for the Bulls. They won their play-in game on, it, well, they won one of their play-in games, but unfortunately on Friday night they were not able to beat the Heat and the season comes to an end. And so the Bulls had their end of the season press conference yesterday in the middle of the afternoon. I'm not sure who had an opportunity to actually catch it because, you know, most people were probably enjoying the weather here in the city of Chicago, but the Bulls did have that end of the season presser that we all look forward to hear some answers. Did AK have any? That is the question. So, you know, I think the real, a lot of people have been critical of the lack of moves that AK and the Bulls made, especially at the trade deadline. Well, he addressed it and he kind of doubled down on why moves weren't made at the trade deadline.
I think we chose the lane, which is stay with the same group. And that came out, you know, Pulse All-Star, the right decision. I don't know if we could have made any changes. We could have done better than 14-9. It's very difficult to do. So I think that was our lane to stay with the group. And then the second is obviously you need to know what was available. And if there were no deals to make this team better, those are decisions that we made and we stayed back.
So he recaps what they did not do. Says they were 14-9 in that 23-game stretch. They ended up finishing 40-42. And
by the way, the Vegas number for the Bulls wins expected 41.5. So they came in under, and which is interesting given how well they played for the most part last year before Lonzo Ball went out. And AK went on to talk about Lonzo Ball is going to be part of this future, Bulls future. But then his next breath said, well, I can't give you a timeline. He couldn't give us a timeline a year ago, January. He couldn't give us a timeline last summer. And the timeline ended up being not at all this season. And yet now we're going to sit here as a Bulls fan and Bulls Nation holding our breath for if and when Lonzo Ball comes back. And when he says we picked a lane and we, you know, there wasn't much available at the trade deadline. And we're basically, he said he'd like to bring the entire core back again. Is he basically saying that the roster isn't very attractive to the rest of the league? There wasn't much he could do because making any kind of moves wasn't going to change your lot appreciably because of the guys you were offering.
I don't know what to, you know, read into what AK says because he says very little. He speaks so infrequently.
And that's another part of my problem with the executives in this town. When it became acceptable to speak beginning of the season and after the season, and maybe if there is an emergency situation during the season, instead of like pretty much every week or when your team is struggling, even to run interference for your coach, every GM I covered knew when they should be on the sideline at practice or courtside to take the heat and answer the questions and make sure that your coach didn't have to repeat himself for the 10th time. And ultimately, you're the manager in general who everything should fall on your desk. And guys like Ryan Pace and now AK, I'm very disappointed in AK. This just becomes a thing. You're just not available.
Yeah. It's just part of the job. Part of the gig is they're too busy to meet with the media. They'll give you the assigned times twice a year, beginning and ends. I've got some good news for you, Bri.
Yes.
We've got a guy up at Hallis Hall who does not take that approach. He will talk to anybody and everybody who will listen.
God bless. So. And maybe, you know, when you're on a honeymoon because everyone knew when you came in that you're going to blow this thing up and things AK won't do.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley told our guys, Waddle and Sylvie, you know, quarter of the way through the season, it's time to blow this thing up and start from scratch. And this is the third time AK's doubling down on continuity for 42 sake.
Here, we'll give you a little more before we bring in Steve Ashburner, who covers the NBA. AK talked about needing to surround the big three, and I put those in parentheses, with some profile players.
Well, we have to surround them with certain profile players, right? What I said before, the ones that we try to bring and surround those three with. I think once you miss any of that, you know, that falls behind. But I think we have all this time, you know, in off season to figure it out, how we can do better. And that's what we're going to do. And exactly the moves or anything that we do in off season, you're going to be able to.
There's a whole lot of nothing. All right. So Vooch, what about Vooch? Is he going to be part of that? I mean, you allude to your big three. That must mean Vooch is going to be part of that, right? Because there's no other person who would account for that.
No, he's been awesome for us. He's been available in all 82 games. He's been our iron man together with Patrick Williams. He's a double-double machine. He's a top three player in double-doubles this year. So he's a huge part of this, you know, team. We hope to retain him.
So Vooch is a free agent, so it's his decision whether he's going to be part of this thing. He said, reiterated yesterday, that he's interested in seeing what's out there and having his agents, you know, talk to teams and find out if there's more money somewhere else. I assume it would come down to that. He says he loves the city, he loves his teammates, loves the organization. He said all the right things, but AK chose not to move him when his stock was never going to be higher at the trade deadline. And he can point to the closing stretch that got him to the 10th spot in the final play-in position. But this big three profile players, does that mean he's going to start giving out money and end up in the luxury tax neighborhood that the ownership doesn't really like to visit? And is Michael Reinsdorf and Jerry Reinsdorf tired of not winning or competing or being relevant? It's 25 years, by the way, since the last trophy has been put in the case at in the Bulls offices now and down at the United Center.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long stretch of not being nearly relevant enough. And what moves we make in the offseason, you know, he can't tell you right now. What moves can you make in the offseason to change your lot appreciably?
Great question, along with the other two that you just asked. Let's bring in Steve Ashburner, who writes for the NBA. We'll talk with him next and ask him his opinion of where the Bulls go from here on ESPN 1000.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
We're sorting through the wreckage of a lost season for the Bulls here on ESPN 1000. I'm Jeff Meller, along with Brian Hanley, trying to react to some of what the Bulls president, AK, Arturs Karnišovas, said yesterday. Was there anything really there? He never really gives any definitive answers. He kind of, you know, and obviously there's, you know, it's not his first language, so I know he's guarded in what he says publicly. That's part of for a lot of people, that's part of the job as well. But it certainly doesn't help that, you know, English is his second language, Bri, because I do find it difficult to take anything away from what he says at these press conferences.
Well, that's when actions can speak louder than your words.
That's a great point.
I'm not so sure that he translates there either.
Let's bring in a guy who's seen a lot of hoops. He is the senior writer for NBA.com, Steve Ashburner, who's also a local man. You
Marquette
know him well.
Man.
Yeah.
Ring out Ahoya.
Ash, what are your thoughts about the Bulls season that just concluded here?
Well, I find that interesting on the second language stuff. I think you could have had the sign language translator and a actual UN translator, and you're going to get the same thing. It's the sign language person would simply hold up their hand with the palm facing out, basically, stop, shut up, we're not going to tell you anything here. It's like a policeman, you know, whistling halt. I didn't see this one. I saw the one coming, you know, after the trade deadline, where he mostly talked about, we've had a lot of good losses, you know, close games. And I saw he did some of that again. I read Casey Johnson's synopsis of yesterday, and it just, I don't know I don't know what reason there is for fans to be optimistic at this point. You know, prior to Acme, I guess as it's called, right, Arturas Karnatsovas and Mark Everly taking over for the previous regime, you know, I got to a point where I felt like Bulls fans were being insulted. They're being taken for granted. The sort of rebuild, makeover, reset, and then finally rebuild. It took too long. I mean, this is the Chicago Bulls. Chicago Bulls are, you know, famous for growing this game globally. The Michael Jordan era, Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen. That's where you'd see the, you know, movie scenes where, you know, kids in the jungles in South America would have a Chicago Bulls T-shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
And the franchise, it should be nurtured better. It the fans deserve better. And, you know, it was frustrating to, you know, hear. Now, you know, what they say is one thing. If they blew everything up in the summertime, well, then, you know, then it's just a matter of we're going to play our, you know, cards close to the vest. But I don't believe that's the case. I mean, based on what we heard out of the trade deadline and again yesterday, it's they seem committed to being stuck in the middle. And, you know, Brian, you've got time in Milwaukee. This stuff reminds me of the Herb Cole era of the Bucks, certainly like the last 10 years or so in Milwaukee, where the goal was let's try to be a 500 team. Let's contend for a low playoff berth. There was no play-in tournament back then. And, you know, be a family-friendly product without having to dig deep into our pockets. And that's what I'm hearing now from the Bulls, how you take this roster and just tweak it and get anything that's going to look like a legit contender.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Steve, because the Bulls fans do deserve better, but I had a friend who took his nephew, big Bulls fan, to the United Center probably 2 weeks ago, one of the last home games, and he spent like $350 a ticket. And I'm like, are you out of your mind? And he said, well, the kid really wanted to go and whatever. And he said the place was packed and everyone seemingly was having a good time. Okay, close losses and good losses don't get it done for me. And it's been 25 years. You know, PAX, whether you liked PAX before he became Gar PAX, when I was covering that team, would say that we judge ourselves by winning championships around here. Well, the last one was 1998. I don't know where you go. Right. This has not been a free agent destination in forever. So if that's the only real route you're going to go, if you're doubling down and keeping continuity for yet again, and Vooch is coming back, even though he's a free agent, you know, AK expects him back. How do you make this team different and appreciably better if the ownership doesn't even want to, you know, get above into the luxury tax area either?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, you know, when you say, I mean, there are three ways to improve a team. You know, this is standard operating procedure in the NBA. It's drafting, it's trading, and it's free agency. And, you know, drafting, I mean, they've gotten rid of draft assets, you know, because of the trades they've made. And now, if trading, I'm not sure you can trade what you have for an impact player. I mean, you'd have to basically trade Zach LaVine and try to break even on that, and maybe get a marginal increase somehow, if depending on what the other team valued or was unloading. So then it's free agency, and you know what major free agent wants to come to? Now they should, you know, Chicago. I mean, the market, the profile of the franchise. It should be, you know, a destination market, but you know, who's the free agent that's going to be coming there? I mean, I think, well, if they can land Giannis Antetokounmpo the next time he's available, you know, when he's free in between contracts. But, I mean, other than that, I'm not sure, you know, who would be on the radar, who would be enough of a needle mover. And, you know, you look at a guy like Damian Lillard. He might be in play, you know, soon. But how do you get him from Portland? Portland's going to want, you know, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Kevin Durant type of return. And, you know, it doesn't look like the Bulls have that anymore.
because of the deals they made just to assemble these guys, getting Vooch and you know, any other moves. I mean, the cupboard's not, maybe not bare, but it's thin, and they're in a tough spot. And this to me is sort of a lesson, even for me, in why teams feel they need to bottom out before they can rise up. You know, it's hard to improve on the fly. If you're stuck in the middle, you know, it's hard because you have to give to get, and you also, if you're gonna try to do a drafting, then you're gonna be out of sync. You're gonna have, you know, your core. I mean, DeRozan and Levine and Vucevic, they're gonna get older. I mean, we all get older, but they're gonna get older as players and as useful products on the floor. And now you're going to bring in draft guys. And so you're going to have two errors in one. That's what stymied Golden State for a while, where, you know, they had these young guys with Kuminga and Wiseman and, you know, a couple more I'm blanking on right now. But then they still had their core that they felt loyal to. And even now, I mean, what's going on in Golden State, they're basically, you know, running on the old core with Jordan Poole as the major reliable young addition. So, you know, that's a tough way to go, and we'll see whether they can, you know, rise up from a six seed this spring. So, yeah, I you know, it's great to see Zach play well.
Until he doesn't Friday night. And that's, well, that's Zach Levine. I mean, you bring his name up, and he's Max Levine, he's Max Money, and it made sense. You had the money, and he was available to give the money to. I'd love to know how the league values him. If you know, we were talking about if you were to, you know, put him out on the market, what kind of response would you get from the rest of the league? How would they look at that player in that contract, and how would they value, you know, getting him in a deal?
You know what I think it would be like for Zach LaVine? It would be like it was for Andrew Wiggins, where he got paid in Minnesota. Minnesota had to pay somebody. They paid him. He really hadn't earned it. He didn't do anything for the Timberwolves to earn it. But, you know, he ends up being appreciated by a team that's going to overspend as their third best player in Golden State. And so he's making max money, even though he only is, you know, maybe their third, maybe their fourth best player behind Curry, Thompson, and Draymond Green. But he filled a role for them. And I think that's how a team that would be serious about acquiring Zach LaVine, I think that's how they would want to acquire him too, to prop up another star or two or even three. I don't think he would be sought after as the tentpole guy that the Bulls are in a position of having to use him as.
Steve Ashburner, senior writer at NBA.com, joining us on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline here on ESPN 1000. Meller and Hanley with you. Steve, I liked your point about the Bulls, you know, that legacy franchise back in the, you know, mid-late 90s when everybody across the world knew who they were. They may not have known, you know, five teams in the NBA, but you knew if they did know one, it was the Chicago Bulls because of Michael Jordan. I was pitching Brian last week. I think the Bulls should keep their powder dry and basically wait in the weeds and hope that Luka gets upset this season, and that should be their play. I think that's like all the points you've laid out make sense. I think Bulls fans who have watched this team closely know that there is no easy out. It feels like, though, in this era of the NBA, it's like you need to keep your five first-round picks in hand because the next superstar that wants out, you need to be ready to pounce when it happens. Is that a ridiculous notion, or are they just stuck anyway, so you may as well do it that way?
Well, I'm not. I mean, I think that's a great point. I think that's, you know, especially given what we laid out previously, that, you know, they're, to me, their best play and maybe their only dramatic and significant play is for a key free agent. And, I mean, Luka Doncic would be you know, he would definitely be that guy. You know, and if you could get him as a free agent, I mean, that's the way to do it because he's not going to want to see, you know, even a sign and trade. I mean, he's not going to want to see assets going back and away from him to the other team. You know, Carmelo Anthony famously, he didn't care. He wanted New York. And when the Knicks sent so many players out to Denver, the Denver actually was a better team than New York, you know, Carmelo didn't care, but I think a guy like Doncic, having gone through this in Dallas, you know, he wants to go where they're not going to be stripped, you know, of current or future additions just by his very presence. So, yeah, you know, that I don't see anything on the horizon better than a big free agent move, and then you have to be willing to spend money. You have to be a tax team.
Yeah, you mentioned New York, and I'm watching the game yesterday, and there's our guy Tibbs on the sideline doing what he does and getting the most out of young guys and old guys, and they look damn impressive. And I know it wasn't this regime, but how the hell did we get to Fred Hoiberg and then Jim Boylan and Billy Donovan? If you can explain the fascination with Billy to get an extension when no one knew he was getting an extension, they didn't want to make it public. I mean, you talk about continuity and doubling down. They just keep doubling down on not, I'd say mediocrity, but that'd be maybe generous.
Good old Tibbs, man. I think of death, taxes, and Tibbs as the inevitabilities in this world. I'm big on keeping politics out of sports, but when you talk about that, I mean, it did make me think of something in politics where they talk about, you know, country over party. This Bulls franchise has sort of flipped that, and they've been party over country, where the internal, you know, vibe and communication and general happiness of people involved, that seemed to me to take precedent over having a maybe difficult coach in Tom Thibodeau, but a highly effective coach. And, you know, I think that internally sometimes things have to be uncomfortable if you're going to be putting the best stuff out on the floor.
So well said.
Steve, we appreciate you making time for us. We will be reading on NBA.com, and I'm sure we'll be picking your brain.
You're heading
later
to Memphis,
as well.
Right? The Lakers got a sniff here?
Yeah, I'm going to be in there. I've got to watch LeBron for a couple of games. I don't think I have to go to the West Coast, but I'll be in Memphis for games one and two. I really feel bad for the Grizzlies in that if they had Steven Adams and Brandon Clark, you know, we would be able to see, you know, them take a step off last year's spring, and they made it to the West semifinals. I think LeBron and Anthony Davis and that group, they caught a break, and I expect them to actually win the series as a seventh seed.
All right, we'll be watching that as well. Steve, great stuff. Thanks for hopping on with us today, man.
You're welcome, guys.
Thanks.
Steve Ashburner of NBA.com joining us there on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. Meller and Hanley with you. We'll take your calls on the other side here on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Meller and Hanley hanging out with you till 11 o'clock today. We've got White Sox coverage coming at 12:30 pregame. Dylan Cease on the mound today, weather permitting. We shall see. Talking some Bulls right now. We just had Steve Ashburner breaking down where the Bulls are at, and it wasn't a very rosy picture that he painted, Bry.
Yeah, I was hoping that, you know, it's just the Bulls fan in me that gets down and frustrated, and it's been way too long. And I was hoping the more objective Steve Ashburner would be more optimistic, and no, he's right there in lockstep with the rest
Not
of us.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Let's go to Paulie, who's in Palm Beach. Paulie, what's going on? Hey, Paulie. Having a little issue with the phone lines today. Hey, Paulie, can you hear me? Maybe not. All right, we'll put him back on hold. Paulie is not impressed with Zach LaVine. I think a lot of people have this problem with Zach LaVine. They're not quite sure if he is a winning player. Steve kind of just outlined some of that. AK talked yesterday about Zach LaVine and the season he had.
Absolutely. Zach had an unbelievable second half of the season. He's back to, you know, healthy Zach, and, you know, he averaged 27 points a game and a high efficiency score. And obviously the example of Toronto game, we don't win that game without Zach. You know, he was a huge part of it, and, you know, the way we won the game and in the second half. So He's done very well for us. I think the biggest thing for us is to find how this group collectively can find ways to win more games. And I think it falls on all of us and, you know, players, coaches, and front office to figure that out.
I'm not sure there's anything AK would rather do less than give an end of the season.
Excuse me?
Give a press conference.
They're going to find out how this group works? How much time do you need? I mean, who else is in charge of that? I mean, I believe you have a whole staff of you know, coaches and scouts and, you know, statistical analysis department. And how much time? You need another 2-3 years on this? Well, I mean, DeMar's 34, going to be 34, right? I don't know. I mean, I think you should have a handle on it. And if the verdict is in now, it doesn't work. No matter the individual talents, and it's great to say Zach had a great second half, averaging 27 points and alluding to the fact that he was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't win the game without him on Wednesday night. Also, the Raptors missing 18 of 36 free throws. And they would have won the game Friday night if Zach wasn't horrendous. And he was horrendous.
Yes.
See, that's the problem with the guy. When you give him that kind of money and he's happy to take it, second halves of a season and a great game Wednesday and a horrific game on Friday, that doesn't get it done.
Correct.
The superstars in this league show up pretty much any, you know, most given nights, and certainly on the biggest stage at the biggest time of year.
That is the voice of Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. We're here till 11 o'clock. If you want to chime in, 312-332-3776. We'll talk Bulls with you. We've also got some Cubs conversation coming your way. We will remember the great era of Blackhawks and Jonathan Toews, the captain, saying goodbye on Thursday nights in the 10 o'clock hour, and your calls as well, maybe a little bit of Bears too. 312-332-3776 here on ESPN 1000.